Hello, everyone, and welcome to the GovCon Judicata podcast, a show providing news, insights, and legal analysis on a variety of issues in the government contracting space. It's also the home of the Bid Protest podcast segment, where we discuss GAO and Court of Federal Claims bid protest decisions, topics, and trends. My name is Joshua Duvall, and I'm your host, and I want to thank you for joining us on today's episode of the GovCon Judicata podcast. All right, everyone, welcome to the GovCon with Josh and Jenny series here on the GovCon Judicata podcast. This is something that I've been meaning to do, and Jenny and I have been talking over the past, 6 to 8 months about doing a podcast together and trying to figure out a way to do it. And we sort of settled on just adding it as a segment to the GovCon Judicata podcast. And so I'm your host, Joshua Duvall, and with me today is my good friend, Jenny Clark. Hi, Jenny.
And today, hey there, Josh.
Good to see you. I'm glad we have an opportunity to connect.
I know. It's just because we're stuck inside our COVID-induced isolation that we're even bothering to talk, right?
I know. Why are we talking on a Sunday evening about the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act and the Paycheck Protection Program? And so what do we have? Back in March, the end of March, Congress passed and the president signed the CARES Act, which is the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. That initially obligated some $349 billion to this Paycheck Protection Program, which is sort of all the rage nowadays. And folks are filling out their applications, which is an unassuming form, so to speak. It's SBA Form 2483. And not long after the passage of the CARES Act, those funds were just gone. I mean, they went shockingly quick. And so on the 24th, I believe, of April, Congress passed and the president signed the Paycheck Protection Program and Healthcare Enhancement Act, which added another $310 billion to this PPP, right, this Paycheck Protection Program. And so folks have been filling out their applications. I think we've seen in the news some large companies that sort of garnered some backlash for why are they able to get this Paycheck Protection Program funds that were supposed to be for smaller businesses. And I think there was maybe Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
And the Lakers, the LA Lakers got it.
We're just starting to see things, and it's sort of infuriating to a lot of smaller companies because they're like, hey, we're the ones that need that money. You guys are potentially publicly traded corporations. You mean to tell me you couldn't have gotten funding elsewhere? And so we've got this update to the Paycheck Protection Program. And with that, as I mentioned, SBA Form 2483 has some interesting certifications. And Jenny, you mentioned earlier, and I'm going to throw it to you in a moment, but you've helped folks with the filling out this form and helping to set up some accounting. And the question is, well, why are we talking about that? And that's because right in the form, if you look at it, there are certifications. And one of the things that was some guidance, a question actually in the an SBA and Treasury's frequently asked questions update, sort of on the heels of this backlash, so to speak, was this question 31. Do businesses own by large companies with adequate sources of liquidity to support their businesses' ongoing operations qualify for a PPP loan? And the answer is actually interesting. And so, it basically says that consistent with what the form certification is on Form 2483, which I'll read it in its entirety. This is the certification that you're checking off. Current economic uncertainty makes this loan request necessary to support the ongoing operations of the applicant, right? And if we go back to this frequently asked questions, Paycheck Protection Program loans, FAQ, which was updated on May 3rd, we scroll all the way down here to question 31, it provides a very interesting answer, and it includes, that borrowers must take this certification, what I just read, taking into account their current business activity and their ability to access other sources of liquidity sufficient to support their ongoing operations in a manner that is not significantly detrimental to the business. And then it goes on to say, for example, a public company with substantial market value and access to capital markets probably is not going to be, you know, will not be able to make this certification in good faith, you know, and they don't think that that's possible. So they've created this safe harbor period, which for folks to give back the loans until May 7th. But that this whole like nuance of the necessity requirement or necessary requirement is actually interesting, because if you actually go back to the certifications, we're certifying in good faith that A, that is one of the items that you're certifying, but also right below that, the funds are going to be used to retain workers and maintain payroll, or to make mortgage interest payments, lease payments, utility payments, as specified under the Paycheck Protection Program rules. And then it goes on to say that you understand that if the funds are knowingly used for unauthorized purposes, the federal government may hold me legally liable and charge me for fraud. And so what does this whole pandemic remind us of? The last time this type of economic uncertainty hit the United States was way back in like 2008, when the economy was collapsing, and then they issued the TARP program, right? The infamous Troubled Asset Relief Program, the bailouts. And in the years that followed, there were a wave of enforcement actions, some of which were under the False Claims Act, which is a situation where if you knowingly, make a representation to the government for money, and that certification is false, you know, the government can come after you. And that's where these whistleblower lawsuits come from, you know? And so, you know, when we were talking about the Paycheck Protection Program, and then you had mentioned that you would help folks get signed up for this. And so I think the theme of the show for today is, what should companies be thinking about as they're making these certifications? Should they be going back and reviewing everything they've written and then making a contemporaneous file as to why they believe it's necessary? And how should they go about allocating, if they're making a certification that says I'm going to use it for payroll and I'm going to use it for mortgage and lease and utility, what in your experience, Jenny, should companies be thinking about right now in terms of creating a paper trail just in case 5 years down the road, for example, a DOJ, comes knocking on your door, or maybe an employee left and says, hey, you know, I think that you erroneously took PPP funds. And now you've got a situation where maybe the folks in your company have gone, they've new job, maybe they're in a different state. And so now you're beholden to like the contemporaneous files that you've done today for something that might happen 5 years from now. And so with that, you know, bring it over to Jenny, and maybe if you want to give the audience here a brief intro into your background and then sort of launch into that and why it's so important that these companies, large and small, you know, take extra steps to make sure that they're creating a record for how they're actually spending these funds, notwithstanding the fact that they truly have a necessary need for them.
Well, Josh, thanks for having me on to talk about this. My specialty is financial logistics for federal contractors, and I work with small businesses all the time to make sure that they have the information to be competitive and to comply with all the rules, because it's one thing to get into government contracting. It's another thing to know how to play the game and make sure that you've got that you need to have. So I've helped a couple of people with the completion of the documentation to apply for the loan. And actually we had to scratch our heads and do some thinking together to figure out how to even answer the question. So it's not a straightforward thing, but essentially we had to estimate what a year's worth of payroll was, chunk that out and say what an 8-week period of that would be. And I think we multiplied it by 2.5 to come up with how much eligible funds they would have that they could apply for. Different banks have different software setups to put that information in. So everybody seemed to have a different way they were responding to the questions. But once we did figure it out, we were very careful about making sure that we were keeping track as we went of the emails back and forth, the conversations that they were having with the bankers, who some of the bankers were in on a Sunday, and we were texting them to ask certain questions. And so we were making sure that we were keeping track of all of those emails. I also created spreadsheets. And in the creation of the spreadsheets, we were allowed to upload 15 documents. And they all had to be PDFs in the case of the bank we were working with. So I had a spreadsheet that had 4 or 5 tabs on it, for here's our payroll, I had to tie it to the quarterly tax returns. And they're not tax returns, they're payroll tax reports. And they're normally called the 941 quarterly payroll tax report, which you add up the four quarters of the 941 and that should equal to your W-2s at the end of the year. So we actually had to take the first three, the last three quarters of 2019 and the first quarter of 2020. All of these things took some figuring out to do. And somebody that's not familiar with accounting and does as much payroll support type stuff as I do might not know that answer, but we got it all in there. We hit the button, we got the go button, and I'm still waiting to hear if they'll get the money back, get approved for the loan, because they submitted to be part of the first set, and that first set of money just whooshed. It went away so quickly.
Fast. Oh yeah. My goodness.
It really did. I believe there was $50 million spent by the state of Florida, and they identified how many loans that was. I think there were 1,000 loans approved under that, which makes it seem like that was a bunch of small businesses. But I was really disappointed by what I call the PPP bandits, those that applied. But really, in my opinion, whether they legally could do it or not, whether my thought was, is it socially responsible? When we're all in this together, why are some of these companies going after that money? And that's really what I've been talking to people about. Anyway, you know, to me, it's the question is, did a CEO and a CFO of a publicly held business that still qualifies under what you and I consider the NAICS codes for small business, sign up for a loan that they could have gotten just because they said, well, somebody else is getting a 1% loan, we're getting a 1% loan. Somebody even called me out and said, well, you know, if they don't apply for it, their shareholders could sue them. And I'm like, we can't run everything that way. But back to your original question, what kind of documentation do they need to keep? I would keep all the documentation in the preparation submittal of the loan. We have the 15 or so documents that we uploaded. So it was every quarter's payroll tax report, every quarter's report that I call the employee payroll document. We chose the last payroll check of the quarter each time. And there's normally on those reports a quarter to date and a year to date amount for the employees. In our case, we didn't have the year to date, the quarter to date. So we had to subtract to get the year to date. We also identified those employees that made over $100,000 a year, because there's a provision called mandatory exclusion to pull those out. It didn't include payroll taxes. It was just their gross pay. So okay. Their regular pay, salaried, holiday. We chose to exclude bonuses. Some people would include those because you would argue that's part of regular compensation. But what I said to them is, let's do the most simplest, the most straightforward, so that we know we can back this up to the penny and that we're doing it right and we're doing it ethically and in a social responsible way. And that's exactly what we did.
It sounds like there's a lot of, it sounds like what you guys were, you know, the path that you took, you know, your clients on was document laden. Let's get everything we can on paper. Let's create a paper trail. Let's, you know, explain why we're doing specific things. Here's all of our entire package with all of our attached files, and then keep those files, you know, and to be able to show someone down the road. Is there anything that folks should be thinking about when they're expending money for their mortgage or their lease or their utility? Because if we go back to what the, at least from what the certification on SBA form 2483 says, it says, you know, they're going to only use this for certain workers and to maintain payroll or to make mortgage interest payments, lease payments, and utility payments as specified under the Paycheck Protection Program rule. Are they, you know, are you just having folks, you know, just keep track of everything that you're paying outside of the paychecks, because it might be a little bit easier with an accounting system, but at least a document, because it sounds like that. And even though you're allowed to go over it, there's another certification even below that's worthy of paying attention to. And it says that, that for loan forgiveness, so it's you're certifying one more thing in good faith. I understand that loan forgiveness will be provided for the sum of documented payroll costs. There's that word documented, covered mortgage interest payments. So we got these mortgage interest payments that are covered, covered rent payments and covered utilities, and not more than 25% of the forgiven amount may be for non-payroll costs, right? So there's some limitations here on how to get the forgivable portion of your loan back, or just so that you're not having to pay it back. So there's a lot of little things that folks need to be thinking about, because as we mentioned, SBA is sort of rapidly, you know, moving forward. They're creating these FAQs and guidance. We'll be seeing things come most likely out of the Federal Register as rules or interim rules. And now we're in a situation where, okay, we don't want to be the person or the company that's taking advantage of a lot of chaos and uncertainty, because we still need to make sure that even though we're uncertain as to what's going on, as more information comes out, we want to be in a position where we're taking our best steps to document the reasons and where the money's going and how we're allocating it. Because God forbid any type of enforcement action coming down the road, whether it's from a relator through a QTAM enforcement action or not, you've got a situation where, you know, like I said, folks have moved on, changed companies, different states, you no longer can get a hold of them. You're really only going to be left with, you know, this is what we did. And if you don't have a paper trail, then it's going to be a lot harder to show that you were thinking about these issues as they were coming up.
That's a really good point. And when they wrote that, what we've interpreted that to mean is that 75% should be for payroll cost. Most of the banks are advising their companies that they're working with on what to do, but they're asking questions as well. And you can't really get through to the SBA, so looking online it will help. But in the end, I believe that companies should be working with their bankers and figuring out what would be the right way to go. So the one that I have worked with that has received the funding, what we determined is that he should set up a separate bank account inside his accounting system. And there's so what we did is we said, here's the bank account, here's the authorized loan amount. And anytime there's a transaction or transfer related to that, we're keeping track of it. So I said, just like anything else, let's make sure that any transaction coming out of that new checking account, which we chose to call PPP checking, we want to have it just so that we could reconcile that bank account just like any other bank account. I've told them to set up new charge numbers if they were doing anything different or specific. But the other thing we did is he said, well, you know, I had to call and get them to transfer money for payroll. That doesn't come out of the check the same way. And so we said, well, that would be a bank transfer. So let's make sure we record the bank transfer the same way we record all other bank transfers and document it. And a lot of our accounting systems now have a place that you can upload documents or some kind of backup. I definitely said, put something on your server, put all these documents on your server, maybe create a zip file every time you got something large. And I always give them the whole paper thing. I say, well, let's get a binder, let's put a label on it, let's stick it on the shelf. And even though I know that younger people don't like to kill cheap trees, I'm a tree killer. I want every single document. And I had 2.5 inches of documentation just on one company's loan package. And that, it was a pretty small company. So, and that's just the stuff that I am keeping, the accounting record. So you can know that this is going to be very specific. The other thing is the money has to be spent fairly quickly. And so a lot of these companies that have biweekly payroll will be able to spend it over 6 weeks or something like that. But what I recommended to them is let's spend the money on payroll first. So we're showing if we had an entire loan amount and we spent it all on payroll, that would be good. A lot of them don't have interest expense or mortgage interest, or if they have rent expense, what the government is trying to do is say, do not default on a loan, and make sure that your rent is kept up to date so you're not getting into these worse problems. But the main thing I did is my personal expectation is I should be able to say, here is the expense, here's the documentation of the invoice or whatever it was that we used that we would normally have in an accounting record. Here's the check or electronic transfer coming out of the bank account that we have. I want it to be precise to the day, and I want to have the right approvals on it, just like anything else. But I believe that you're absolutely right. They're going to be coming back 5 years from now, mm-hmm. and ask people what happened. And I also believe that there'll be some of the contract activity, especially where a small business or has asked for some kind of special information or whatever to have a contracting officer, they're going to want to document those type of things too.
That makes sense. I mean, it sounds like it all comes down to being able to document and record and keep a trail that's, you know, auditable, because if you're one of those unfortunate companies that is subject to this audit or faces a lawsuit, you want to be in the best position to be able to say, no, I did everything by the book. Here's what I did. Here's my thinking. This is why I believed it was necessary for me to take the money. Here's how I, you know, here's my loan application. Here's this separate designated bank account that we kept, and it shows all the transactions for payments to employees, for payroll. And here's the three or four times we made a utility payment or a lease or a rent payment. And that's going to look favorable, because the folks that are going to get hit are the ones that are being evasive, you know. Now, this isn't a show on the False Claims Act. At a top level, we're really at a situation where you're asking, you're making a certification under the SBA form that you're checking boxes here that, yes, in good faith, I meet all these criteria. And then, you know, 5 days later, if you're lucky, you open your bank account and you see a lot of money there finally, you know. And so now you've got strings on that in the form of only spending it on what you're allowed to spend it on. And in order to do that, like you mentioned, taking these steps and having a track record is going to be important. And not just for the PPP, but for other business practices that might come down the road.
Well, I've got some other stuff I'd like to add. And so we talk about access to other financial resources, and the Lakers could go to a lot of different resources. They could ask their players maybe to do something different. I'm not sure what they could do, but I think that it was possible for those to be able to have other access to other ones. The other one that I heard of is some billionaire that went and got it, and he made a clear statement. He said he's entitled to it, and he didn't prevent anybody else to getting. And I thought, if we only have $349,000 worth of money, and some of it was fees for the bank processing and stuff like that, how could you possibly say that you're taking money, your $4 million loan that you took, didn't deprive somebody else of that? And I think that's just wrong. I just thought, okay, well, what is he going to, he must have been really upset about it, because I'm sure he couldn't sell his yacht at this time. It would be inconvenient to do that.
Well, yeah, you make a good point, you know, with the guidance that sort of came out with this question 31, taking into account their business activity and their ability to access other sources of liquidity, right? What are we talking about? You have money in the bank, right? You've got some cash set aside. You know, do you have, does your current banking institution, have they already given you a line of credit that you just haven't used and is just sitting there, right? You're like, oh, you know, I'm financially prudent and don't take risks, but I do have this one line of credit that I'm allowed to exercise up to $500,000, but I never do it. Is that part of this other sources of liquidity that you're making a certification for? In the government contracting space, if you're in a mentor-protege relationship, and
let's talk about that. There are companies that have a line of credit and will proudly say they never borrow any money off their line of credit. And those probably, they probably went to their bank and said, well, I think we're going to take some money off the line of credit now to get through this, and we will get through this. But if you think about it, the entire foundation of how we finance government contracts for small business is a pretty complicated piece for those companies or service contractors. Because they basically bring the people on, run payroll for 2 weeks. At the end of the month, they invoice. They will probably get paid. They've got to float 45 to 60 days of payroll just in general, 100% of the time. And a lot of times the way the bank arrangements are set up, they have to have an invoice or revenue in order to finance payroll. So if they can't keep their invoicing, their revenue going, they're stuck. And I think this is going to display a lot of cracks in how we've been dealing with small businesses all along, if we say that they are the lifeblood of our economy and they say, and we say that they're an important part of the supply chain, we're going to have to make some changes in the way those small businesses are funded and financed to make this work in the future. So this is one crisis. We'll all get through it. We're all in it together, but it does open up a lot of larger questions. So Josh, these are great topics for us to discuss, the PPP, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely. This was a fun, quick introductory episode here on the GovCon with Josh and Jenny series on the GovCon Judicata podcast.
And so for one last time, a lot of the information coming out of the SBA and Treasury, these FAQs are coming at a rapid pace, so please pay attention to that. We've got a safe harbor until May 14th. And so for everyone that joined us today, thank you so much.
Jenny, I want to thank you so much for being on with me today and to talk about, and it's always great to hear your expertise because we're sort of at the opposite end of the government contracting spectrum, helping small and mid-sized government contractors. I'm on the legal end, but you're on the numbers and consulting end with not just the finances and pricing data, but there's a whole lot of other things that I know you do. So it's been a pleasure to be on with you tonight, and we'll hope all the folks got something out of it. If you want to throw out your website, Jenny, feel free to do that.
Well, my website's Solvability, SolvAbility.com. And the easiest way to find me is out on LinkedIn. It's Jenny W. Clark, and would love to talk to anybody that has any questions.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thank you so much. Until the next time on the GovCon Judicata podcast.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the GovCon Judicata podcast. My name is Joshua Duvall, and I want to thank our sponsor, Matross Edwards, Government Contracts and Cybersecurity Attorneys. We really hope you enjoyed the show today, and if you did, please give us a follow on LinkedIn and Twitter at GovCon Judicata. For more content, you can also visit the blog, govconjudicata.com, and for more episodes, you can always check out govconjudicatapodcast.com. Thanks again, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the GovCon Judicata podcast.